Hello, my name is Stephanie Bunn. I'm with the East Carolina Alumni Association. I want to welcome everybody to today's
Jim
Pirate
Burnett.
Call. We're probably going to have a few more people join us. Start today's call. Angela Moy from ECU Human Resources is going to be our host today. And if you have any questions at any point, feel free to stop Angela and ask her. I hope everybody received the PowerPoint so you can follow along as we discuss salary negotiation. And before we get started, I just want to tell everybody a little bit about the East Carolina Alumni Association. We're here to help you as graduates of East Carolina. We do that through career service initiatives. We also have regional programs in case you're not located here in Greenville. And then there's, of course, our tailgates and all the events we do to bring alumni together. You can find out more on our website at piratealumni.com, which most of you have visited to register for today's call. And with that, Angela, I think we're ready to jump into salary negotiations whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Stephanie. I am Angela Moy. I'm the Director for Employment and Clinical Support Services with the Department of Human Resources here at East Carolina University. Last month, I actually hosted a session on the benefits of temporary employment. And for those of you who are in between jobs, if you're unemployed, recently relocated, or perhaps making a career change, you may also want to view that presentation on temporary employment at the Alumni Association website. Today's session will focus on effective salary negotiation. Now, I have to say that prior to working in human resources, salary negotiation was not something that I was really familiar with. I was just so thankful to actually get a job offer that it never occurred to me that there was any potential to even negotiate for a higher salary. But in fact, as we will talk about today, salary negotiation is a common practice. And in most cases, salary negotiation is expected by employers. So how do we, as job seekers, determine when it is appropriate to negotiate salary? Finding a job, we've often heard, is a job, and it takes effort, and certainly negotiating for a competitive salary is also a job that takes effort. And so I think the first key in negotiating salary is to know the value of the job that you're trying to obtain. How do we do that? Research the market. There are a number of tools available on the web to assist you in researching market data for the particular job that you're trying to gain. One of the most common is salary.com. And in the PowerPoint presentation, you'll see that I visited that website and entered a job title. The one that I entered was just pharmacist. We do have pharmacist positions here at the university, both in student health as well as at the med school. But if I'm a pharmacist, wherever I might live, in Greenville, in North Carolina, or perhaps in another state, if I'm looking to make a move and determine what salary I should be looking for, salary.com can assist with that. So I entered pharmacist, entered the zip code for Greenville, North Carolina, and you can see the results that were produced. It produced a range from $83,461 all the way up to $102,798, and then you can see the bell shape in the middle. The majority of pharmacists in the Greenville area fall somewhere between $88,000 and $98,000, just to give myself an idea of the salary range or the going rate for a particular occupation. Certainly, I would encourage applicants and job seekers to also research specific employers to see if they provide any salary data. Now, many employers will actually post a salary range, but salary ranges can be misleading. It often shows a minimum all the way to a maximum. Many applicants, in judging whether to apply for a job, will look at their own salary, and if it fits within that range, they automatically assume that, okay, yes, that works for me, that range works. And many people assume that they will be paid at the upper end of the salary range that is posted if indeed they are highly qualified, if they have the education and experience that the employer is looking for, and that may not always be the case. Specific to East Carolina University, we actually utilize career banding, and this is somewhat of a new salary administration system for us. Career banding is utilized for all salary negotiations, and salary is negotiated on the basis of four pay factors. One of those pay factors is, in fact, market. What is the market reference rate for a particular position that we have posted? And we'll talk about and look at some market rates in just a few minutes. Another factor outside of market, though, is how much does a hiring department have budgeted for a position? And budget, certainly right now, given the current economic situation, is somewhat of an issue for many employers, and particularly with state institutions. Another factor that we look at in determining salary for new employees is equity. That simply means, what are the other employees in the department earning? So while we do look at market, while we do look at budget, we also look at what the other employees in an area are also earning to maintain equity. And then certainly competencies, and that simply means, what knowledge, education, experience, what specialized skill sets are required for the position? What do you bring to the table that the employer is looking for? And the majority of the time, you're going to see that posted in that job ad for the position, and how well are you qualified for that position. You'll see that I included just one example of the career banding market rates. This is actually the administrative support branch for East Carolina University. You'll see that it includes four different job classifications. There's an administrative support associate, an administrative support specialist, there's a supervisor level, and then there's an executive assistant classification. Notice the minimum and the maximum for each of those, and that's a pretty wide range. Even for administrative support associate, the minimum is $22,067. That goes all the way up to $44,650. However, you'll also notice that there are three levels for each of those classifications. So for an admin support associate, it could be a contributing level position, which is entry level. It could be a journey level position, or it may be an advanced level position. And so really, a better indicator of what you're looking at in terms of pay would be those reference rates that you see. So an admin support specialist, excuse me, an administrative support specialist at the journey level, we would be looking at a salary somewhere around $34,968. Now, again, that's what market says we should be paying. That's the going rate for the state of North Carolina for this level of position. But we also, again, will look at how much a department has budgeted. They may not have 100% of market. They may have less, or they may have more than that. What is the equity within that department? What are the other employees earning? But again, it kind of gives you a better indication of what kind of salary you may be able to earn for a particular classification. All of our classifications are available on our website, hr.ecu.edu. There is a link to career banding that provides market reference rates for all of the positions that we have at the university, again, to be utilized as a guide for you if you're applying for positions with the university to determine what kind of salary you may be able to earn. Our goal as a university is to pay our employees somewhere between 90 and 110% of market. Now, again, the career banding system is somewhat of a new system for the state of North Carolina. Many of our positions are not at that 90 to 110%. They may be below market. So, again, it's really contingent upon how much we have budgeted and what the equity is with our current employees as to what we can offer for a particular position. But that's something to consider when applying for a position with ECU or applying for a position with another employer, is what kind of salary data do they provide on their website. Another thing that we would encourage you to do is to research cost of living. Many of our applicants are from out of town or from out of state, and to ensure that you are looking at a job offer and comparing apples to apples in terms of the standard of living and the amount of money that's required to maintain a certain level of living, we really encourage you to visit websites that do conduct those comparisons for you. The example that you see is from CNN.com. I think Homefare is also another excellent website to go to find cost of living comparisons. What you do at this website is simply enter your current salary, provide the city and state where you live, and then give the destination. And you can see here that I entered just $100,000 for North Carolina in the city of Greenville, and if I'm interested in moving to Memphis, Tennessee, the results show that if I wanted to move there, I would only have to earn $89,227 to maintain the same standard of living that I'm currently enjoying in Greenville, North Carolina. And likewise, I guess the opposite side of that would be if I were a candidate living in Memphis, Tennessee, and I'm earning $89,227, in order to really live at the same standard based on the cost of groceries, housing, utilities, transportation, and health care, I would really need to earn $100,000 in Greenville, North Carolina to have that same standard of living. So, again, it's just a good exercise to go through, particularly if you're considering moving out of town. Certainly, in considering any job offer, we encourage candidates to think about the total compensation package, not just the dollar amount. And things that are part of that, aside from the money, would be whether you receive paid sick and vacation leave and how many days that are provided for that, whether that sick and vacation leave roll over from year to year and continue to accrue days, or whether it's a use it or lose it type of situation with leave, and then holidays, how many holidays are paid. Health insurance is one of the big topics of consideration for many folks considering employment with the university and with other employers. Things like whether health insurance is provided at no cost to the employee. Now, with East Carolina University, for employee only, we do provide health insurance for employee only at no cost to the employee, and then the employee has the option of providing coverage for children and for family by paying those monthly premiums. The cost of premiums is certainly a factor for many people changing jobs. How much are they currently paying in terms of health insurance premiums versus how much will they be paying with the new employer? What are the deductibles? What are the co-pays? That kind of thing. And so, again, a salary offer isn't just based on that dollar amount. Whether retirement is offered in terms of what the employer contributes towards retirement, any flexible benefits that may be included in the package, including vision, dental, any supplemental insurance such as term life, accidental death and dismemberment insurance, cancer policies. Some employers, such as the state of North Carolina and East Carolina University, provide flexible spending accounts where you can put money aside that is pre-taxed for health care expenses, for child care, tuition waiver and book loan programs. The university does provide for a tuition waiver program for staff. Another important consideration is whether the position that you're looking at is eligible for overtime. Is it a position that is considered as exempt from overtime, meaning that you work as many hours as it takes to get the job done, or is it a job where you have a 40-hour set schedule and anything that you work beyond 40 hours is considered overtime? And then is that overtime compensated in overtime pay, or is it compensatory time off at a later date? So, again, other things that one might consider in considering a job offer and whether it's appropriate to negotiate. For many, travel and commuting becomes a factor in determining whether a job offer is appropriate. If we've got someone who is living in Greenville and they're currently commuting to Raleigh every day, they may consider a lower salary simply because of the money that they're spending on gas and for commuting every day. And then certainly the opportunity for advancement. Is the position one for which you would move into that position, and that's pretty much it in terms of advancement, or is it an entry-level position for which there may be opportunity over a period of time to advance to other positions with higher salaries and greater responsibilities? And then I guess one of the most important aspects of salary negotiation is the timing. I would encourage candidates to refrain from discussing salary too early. We work with many candidates whose current or previous salary may be higher than the salary of the position they're actually applying for. If your salary is negotiable, or if you're in that situation, but your salary is negotiable and you're not 100% tied to that salary in terms of I must earn my current salary in order to make a move to a different employer, and you do not want that current or previous salary to be a factor in considering you for a position, I would encourage candidates not to provide that information on the application and avoid discussion of salary too soon. During the interview process and during that initial consideration period, you want the focus to be on finding out about the job and determining whether you are a match for that job. You want to sell the employer on you as a candidate before even discussing salary. So rather than providing up front your salary expectations, I would encourage candidates to find out first what the employer is willing to pay. If you provide salary first, in my opinion, you're giving the employer the upper hand. You may, in fact, unknowingly set the bar lower in terms of that initial offer than was necessary. If the employer provides that salary information first, and you're able to redirect that conversation so that it then becomes, what are you looking at paying for this level of position, then you have that upper hand in determining whether a counteroffer is appropriate. Now, upon receiving an offer, let's say we make it through the interview stage and you actually are recommended for a position, regardless of the offer, high, low, or you know exactly what you were looking for, I would encourage candidates to consider that offer for 24 hours before responding. You need to give yourself time to consider that total compensation, not just the salary, and then determine whether a counteroffer is appropriate. When you've looked at everything in terms of total compensation, the health insurance, the potential for overtime, the travel, anything that may be a factor in determining your decision, if you're going to provide a counteroffer, I would encourage you to prepare for that, to take some time to prepare that argument. Negotiate based on the level of the job, any market data that you have, any data that you have with regard to the cost of living, with regard to your current benefits and the benefits package of the prospective employer. The skills that you bring to the job, rather than simply stating, and we hear this all the time, with nothing to back it up, I was hoping to earn, or I was hoping to make X amount of dollars. In order to counteroffer, you really need to have some supporting documentation to go with that, to support that and sell the employer on that counteroffer. Certainly be realistic. An initial offer of $38,000 is not likely to end up at $50,000. Most negotiations are within 5 to 10% of that initial offer. And many times we see candidates that will allow a few hundred dollars to be a deal breaker on whether they're going to accept the job or not. I've seen candidates who perhaps were offered an initial salary of $38,000. They counter with $40,000, and then we may come back with the most that we can offer as being $39,500, and it's a deal breaker. But $500 ends up resulting in them declining the position. But before declining, you really need to think about, what does that $500 mean, or that $200 or whatever the amount might be over the course of a year? And for a job offer that's short by $500, you're talking about less than $42 a month before taxes as being a deal breaker on accepting a position. And again, that may be the case. It may be that you cannot come for any less than a certain amount, and if so, then it's appropriate to decline. But before declining over a relatively small amount of money, take into consideration that total compensation. And then certainly with any job offer, it's always appropriate to thank the employer for the opportunity, regardless of the decision. We would encourage you never to burn bridges and to compromise your personality or your professionalism over a job offer, because you never know when you may want to seek employment with that employer again. And I guess finally, if employment with East Carolina University is something that you're interested in, I would encourage you to visit our website at jobs.ecu.edu. We do have a number of positions posted on the website. Currently, not as many as we have had in the past. We certainly have been impacted by the state budget reductions, and that's something that we're currently working through, but we do have some positions posted on the website. If you're interested in employment, then please visit jobs.ecu.edu. I'll open it up now for questions or for comments if anyone would like to share.
Yeah, I would just like to have you make some comments on, suppose you have a headhunter that contacts you, and about working with headhunters, if you could talk a little bit about that.
Well, the university, I will say, we really do not, we also, as an employer, are contacted frequently by headhunters. What we typically advise headhunters is that they are certainly welcome to make their candidate aware of the opportunities available with the university. We do not work directly with headhunters. If you're in the job market, I would encourage you to do your own searching, if at all possible, rather than utilizing a headhunter, unless they're simply identifying the opportunities and then you're pursuing those externally. But as a university, because our positions are posted on the website, we also post with a number of other external advertisers, such as Yahoo Hot Jobs, Monster.com, HigherEdJobs.com, The Chronicle. We have a number of external advertising groups that we work with that really provides us with a sufficient pool of candidates on our own. So that, at this point, that's not something that we utilize to a great extent.
I had a question in regards to the slide that you showed with the example of the pharmacist.
Uh-huh.
On that website, say for instance, say in my position, I'm a registered nurse, but I'm on an administrative side and not on the clinical side. So does that information factor into that? Because I know that whether you're clinical versus administrative is a different thing in of itself.
Right, and some of that, it really depends on the search options that they have, but I would say for most of the medical positions, those rates are going to be based on the clinical side, and a lot of it is focused more towards the private sector as opposed to state institutions or universities, and healthcare is something that we continue to struggle to be competitive with as an institution. And so I would say that probably if you're on the administrative side of nursing, that these rates may be high for what you're looking for, or based on what the employer may actually be paying.
How do you suggest doing a thorough, you know, job search as far as salary goes if you're on the administrative side when the sites are more geared towards, you know, the clinical side?
I guess I would have to say to continue to, if you're not identifying many of the administrative roles, that you may have to contact some of those same folks that are involved in the hiring for the clinical side and see if you can to get some better contacts for the administrative side. And you know, perhaps that would be an appropriate time if you're very specialized to seek guidance from a headhunter or some other source. We do from time to time have positions that are nursing that are, you know, we've had some that were focused more on the data side or the research side than the clinical side, and I would say that those are, you know, much less frequent. You really have to be a passive job seeker, and even though you may be currently working, continue to seek out those opportunities even when you're not really looking for a job. And again, finding a job, it's a job, and a lot of people don't have time to commit to actually searching on an ongoing basis for positions that they're interested in.
Could you discuss a little bit going to your current employer and asking for a raise?
You know, sadly, that discussion often occurs at the point that you're considering another job opportunity, and it's a discussion that we have with our departments a lot of times when an employee has been offered another position. And certainly we always advise that, you know, the appropriate time to look at salary is on an ongoing basis as you can. I think it's kind of the same approach as salary negotiation. When you're being offered a job with your current employer, if salary is an issue, if you feel like you're not being paid commensurate with the level of the job or with the duties associated with the position, I would again encourage you to research that, to provide data for that employer to support the request for additional money. Right now is not a really good time to negotiate salary for current positions because there's so many people just thankful to have a job that it's easier to negotiate that kind of thing in better economic times. But certainly I would encourage you to research that if it's an equity issue with other positions in your department. Discuss that with the employer. Have that honest discussion to say, you know, I really feel that a salary increase is appropriate and provide that data to support that argument. Any other questions?
And also, if anybody has any personal experiences maybe that they want to share or get Angela's opinion on, you can offer those up as well. Well, Angela is available. She's given her contact information at the beginning of the presentation here so that you can get in touch with her if you have further questions based on this discussion, or maybe if, as you're going forward in the next few months, a new situation comes up that you want to get her opinion on. We also have the ECU Career Center that's open to alumni to get career counseling. And coming up in March on the 26th, if you're in the Greenville area, there is going to be a All Majors Career Fair that alumni are welcome to attend at the Greenville Convention Center. Next month's Pirate Career Call on April 2nd is going to be career changers. So it might be something that maybe if you're thinking about negotiating your salary, you're probably thinking about switching careers, as Angela mentioned. So So next month we're going to have the ECU Career Center here to give us some advice on making that change. Does anybody have any more questions or comments while we have Angela on the line? Okay, well, Angela, thank you so much for doing today's Pirate Career Call. You can always call the Alumni Association if you have any questions about membership or the services that we offer. And again, we're on the web at piratealumni.com. Thanks for calling in today, and have a great afternoon.